Thanks for tuning in to the Campaigns of the Plains channel. Catch new material every Friday on YouTube and make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Now, on with the show.
And welcome back to Campaigns of the Plains. Guys, you are currently in the Ember Market after just visiting with your Albed friends about your ship when Becky noticed some familiar Gria down in the Ember Market. One of those figures happening to be her mother. And as Becky looked on from afar, her mother turned and caught Becky's gaze. So that is where we will start today. Becky, this woman that caused you quite a bit of grief in your life, now stands a deer in the headlights, not thinking, obviously, that she would ever lay eyes upon you again, but yet, here you are, and you can see, as her mouth kind of hangs open in disbelief, at the same time, as her eyes kind of, you know, dilate down, she also see her kind of look you over and catches a glimpse of you. Now, re-healed wings.
Becky stares her right back in the eye, but narrows her eyelids. And after taking a moment, I think Becky's going to march forward. And letting go of the hilt of her dagger, she reaches out and slaps Vani across the face.
Not that this should be hard, but definitely roll me an attack roll, an armed attack.
Oh. It can't be.
Sorry, I didn't have it pulled up.
I think it's your strength.
Probably. Let's see. Unarmed strike. Plus five. That's a nine.
Nine's enough to hit her. She's sitting here wearing basically just a dress. So, she, like, you catch her right across the face, and the slap immediately quiets the area that you guys are currently in, where there had been some bustling and trading this late in the evening. It immediately becomes quiet. You guys that hadn't really seen Becky slip away, suddenly hear a smack come from about 15 feet down in the Ember Market, just a few feet away from them.
Ella makes shocked Pikachu face while she turns around and stares.
And Bonnie's just sitting there with her hand on her face, and then, like, her hair is kind of disheveled, and she turns back at you and she says, "Demon,
fuck you, curse you 1,000 times
she just kind of like looks at you, and she looks back at Nakano, who is like now just noticed your presence as she turns around from one of the others that she was dealing with, one of the marked folks, and she kind of looks a little taken aback, and you see her, like, reaching for a dagger because she doesn't know it's you when she kind of turns around, just that somebody has assaulted somebody that is with her. So she immediately turns around and sees you, and then not a look of disgust, but a look of disbelief. And then she kind of looks towards Vani, and Vani says, "Curse you. Curse you will bring about the end." And she spits, like, right at your shoes, and she immediately starts to take off towards one of the gates.
I yell behind her, "I could have killed you just now, but you're already dead to me."
She turns back around, whirls on her heels, and looks at you and said, "I died the day I brought you into this world." And instead of, like, turning around to, like, walk, you immediately see her spread her wings and start to, like, fly off. And this tiny little elderly Guria woman. She has gray hair and similar black horns as Becky does, black tail as well. She kind of shuffles up to Becky and she says, "Well, that was one way to introduce yourself again."
"Hello, Miss Shinsetsu."
I didn't think that we would see you again, no offense.
"Me neither. You're a ways away from Trilixis."
"Well, times are hard and the growing season hasn't been that good, and neither has fishing season, so we've come to town to try to trade for what we need. Is the closest town that we can get to?"
"Yes, I suppose it is. How are you doing?"
"Oh, as well as can be expected of someone my age, but..." And she looks around and she says, "It's quite fortuitous that I would meet you outside of the village."
"How are things in the commune?"
"Not good. Not good at all." But she's looking around now, like around your shoulder and like behind her shoulder, but it seems like she's searching for something that she's not looking for people. She's looking just like just above your shoulder and kind of around like the back of her shoulder. And you see now, what's your passive perception?
It is 13.
13. You see as from, she has this rather large kind of darker shawl over her that covers most of her body. She's a little hunched over from age, but you see just for a second, you catch a glimpse as it seems like she is weaving kind of some kind of somatic signs underneath her shawl. And you go ahead and make me an arcana check.
Sure. That's good. It's a natural 19 on.
It's good. So you immediately see this flash of purple in her otherwise mostly black pupils. And you see, as she's kind of looking around, you immediately know that she is casting Detect Magic.
I'll tell her that if you're checking to see if Osoroshi is watching me, I assure you he is. I've seen his scrying several times.
"Oh, I know he is, but you're not the only one that he watches." And you see this little bit of magic kind of burst from her fingertips as she seems to lock on, like she's staring at something over your shoulder. And you see this little bit of like blackish purplish energy kind of crackle from her fingertips and ever so subtly like move beyond you, and it comes in contact with something that's behind your shoulder. And then there's this like flash of light and she says, "We don't have much time. That won't buy a lot of time. He will see us again." And she like gets real close to you and she reaches into one of the hands of her shirt and she pulls out a scroll and she says, "I was going to give you this the day before they ejected you from the village, but fortunately, I did not get to see you before they did. So open this at your discretion." And she hands you this scroll that's kind of bound up and sealed with Osoroshi's symbol.
I take it and tuck it into my clothes and say, "Thank you. I have so many questions. I know we don't have time, but can you at least tell me, was there any crime that they cut my wings off for? Petty theft? I got better, obviously, but not with a grave cost."
"It was more than petty theft at work." And she like looks down at the scroll and she says, and she starts like looking over your, she's not making eye contact with you at all. She's still looking for some kind of signs. And she says, "Like I said, view it at your discretion, but that is all the time that I have." She immediately turns around without saying anything, no goodbyes or anything like that, but she immediately starts walking towards the city gate.
I think Becky looks after her and a little tear comes down her eye. Probably the second Gria she actually...
Oh, so yeah, you guys kind of sat there staring at this, Oh, there it goes. You guys sat there and stared at this interaction with Becky. What are you guys doing?
Are you okay, Becky?
Yeah, I'm fine. Whatever. And she just kind of pulls, like, her robes a little tighter, securing the scroll. And I think she's going to just start heading back towards the hotel we secured. And she says, I think I need a nap or something. I'll just be at the inn when we're ready.
Okay.
And Becky starts taking off back towards your guys' hotel. Jerick looks at you, Milos, and is like, is everything all right?
Yeah, I think so. She just, you know, had a disagreement with that lady. I don't like to get into the details. It's Becky's business. It's not mine. It just don't worry about it.
Okay. And he looks over at Sydney. He says, well, if I can be as so presumptuous, and this character kind of nods and he says, yeah, I think we should have your guys' ship ready probably by tomorrow night if you guys did want to take it out. So.
Oh, yeah, of course.
What's your recovery period from your surgery, Milos? Is it like an outpatient thing? Is it going to be like 2 to 3 days in the hospital? Like, what are we looking at here?
Did they tell me how long it was going to take? I don't think I wrote it down. I don't know if they actually said it.
Didn't get into the specifics, but yeah, they said it'd probably take you, a few hours to recover from the surgery, but they'll have healers and other such folk.
Is he going to be on, like, weight restrictions, lift restrictions? Like,
you just can't eat after midnight, all right? We already went over that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just tell Ellie. I'll be fine. They'll have plenty of people to take care of me. It should take only an hour or two or three. But definitely not a full day. Hopefully there's no complications. That's all they really told me.
Okay. Well, we get to watch, so we'll just, we'll see if you die.
Thanks? I'm not worried enough already about this. I really don't want to be talking about this.
I promise that if you do die, I'll send your fireflies to the far plane, but they might not make it there because it's blocked. So you might sit in limbo for a while. So maybe we'll just put you back in your body.
I think we should maybe not.
You're gonna be fine. It's a really easy procedure, I'm sure.
Sure. Anyway, I try not to think about it.
Maybe
I'll turn
some drinks. Can you have alcohol before midnight?
I just can't eat after midnight. I'm assuming I probably can't drink either.
Well, we have until midnight then.
We certainly do. Let's find the nearest bar and we can get wasted. And I will turn to Sid and Jarek and be like, where should we meet you tomorrow to pick up our ship? Just like here or?
Sid says, actually, we'll have the dock set up at the Burning Palace. So Burning Palace used to have an air dock. We actually are pretty excited to have renovated it recently. So should be ready to go from there.
Cool.
Okay. And I will give him a bow and be like, we really appreciate this for all your help. But I really want to go get shit-faced right now, so I will talk to you later. And I'm just going to start wandering in the nearest direction that I have any idea that a bar is.
It'd be the Ember Market.
Okay. That's the exact direction I'm going. And I'd be like, are you guys coming?
Sure. Do you think we were just drunk recently and it didn't very suit any of us very well?
I'm not sure that it's a good idea. It might cause some blood issues, you know.
Does alcohol make you weird things to blood?
Yes.
Oh. Meatless, you probably shouldn't drink.
I'm way too far out of your earshot, and you can't talk to me, so I don't hear
this. No, I can, though, because I have sending.
Are you going to use ascending to tell me this?
He'll be fine. We can remove curse him in the morning. Somebody can. Maybe he can do it to himself. What? They're healers that can.
What curse are you removing?
The curse of alcohol.
Or what's the you know, like a give him one of your potions for like anti poison, you know? Can't you make a hangover relief potion? But not in your.
That would be invaluable. I'm just saying.
Incredibly greasy foods.
You can't eat after midnight. That's a bad potion.
Yep. Mm. See.
Right.
That's true.
He's helpless. Really.
Well, you know.
It's too bad.
If he's really hungover and he's very concentrated on how he's got a really bad headache from all the alcohol he consumed, he won't notice them flaying his leg and his abdomen.
I would suspect they would try to make him unconscious.
They have to shave him.
I was kind of wondering if he had some of the metal growing on his private areas and how they would handle
that. About
that. That's right, you did, because I'm a little concerned. But like, how are they going to get it off of the private areas?
I was wondering.
I've got a machine dick.
Milos, you just feel your ears tingling right now.
Those bitches are talking about me, I just know it.
Alright. So, are you guys all following Milos to the bar?
Yeah. I don't like alcohol, it makes my head hurt, but I'm gonna have some, because Milos might be Milos' last night on Earth.
What? Jesus.
Glad I didn't hear that.
Well,
so you never know, even the most basic surgeries can sometimes end in tragedy.
Yeah.
I got really into medical dramas for a while.
How in the hell would Ellie have watched medical dramas?
No, the books.
The books.
The books.
Oh, the books.
You know, it's a really great novel series. There's like 72 volumes. Mm-hmm. It's called ER.
What is gross. In Austin?
I'm pretty sure it's some kind of spell.
Ah.
I don't know how. It's hard to pronounce, but
must
it's
be something like it's emergency healing, restoration.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a healing spell. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I'm just going to write down that note that I have to add a book called Emergency Restoration.
Just put in the entire plot of ER. I'm sure it's really easy and concise.
Put that in.
What's that other, like, long-running,
Grey's Anatomy?
Anyway, so you guys make
General Hospital.
Also,
or General Hospital, yeah.
Stage plays based upon it.
Yes! Yes.
Okay. Anyway.
I feel like I saw something about them coming to the city.
Actually, I kind of thought maybe you got your mask from one of the props from there.
What?
Well, the medical professionals, you know, they put the scents in the mask so that they don't smell the decay of the dead flesh. Very interesting.
Anyway.
Still, because I like the smell.
You guys start heading towards the bar. Milos, you are already well on your way once they reach you. We'll cut back to Becky. You make it to the hotel room. What are you doing?
I go up to the room, and I'm going to close the door, lock it behind me, and I don't know how this room is furnished, but I'm going to, like, jam something against the door.
So it's more of a Near Eastern style room with the sliding doors and tabby mats, that kind of bedding for here. So
okay, well, I guess then I'm going to cast Detect Magic and just look around the room, make sure there isn't any scrying or spying on me.
It seems like whatever. Whatever had been dispelled behind your back earlier doesn't seem to have reapparated at all. So you seem to have a little bit of time to yourself.
While that's up, I want to look at the scroll and see if I get an aura off.
Yes. Actually, not from the scroll itself, but the scroll seems to be very large scroll, but there seems to be something in the middle of the scroll. You're detecting magic on what looks to be a sphere that's probably wrapped up in the scroll.
Oh. Okay. While she has time, she's just going to sit down and cast Identify and see if she can figure out what this is, what's inside of it.
Yeah, so you cast Identify, and this is similar to one of the spheres that you've seen before. This is a memory sphere, so contains a recording of something. You haven't played it yet. You haven't opened the scroll either, but... it seems like there's a memory sphere contained within.
I think she's going to... She wants to carefully break the seal on it. Because she looks at Oshiroshi's seal, and first instinct is to crumble it to dust, but it might be useful later. So she wants to try and peel the seal up without breaking.
Yeah. Make me a sleight of hand, we'll call it.
Okay. It's a nine.
You manage to kind of start to pry the seal up, but it starts to, it looks like the seal is old. Perhaps older than you, and the wax on it has hardened to a degree where you kind of crack it. Pretty sure you get the rest of it up, maybe not in one piece.
I mean, it's already cracked, so I'll just try and prevent as much damage as possible and just continue to open it.
Okay. Besides that one crack, you don't manage to break it any further, but it is a nice crack along the middle, which is Osorochi's seal is, of course, the kind of green three-pronged dragon claw with his symbol kind of written in the Near Eastern style. So, but you manage to kind of crack it along the bottom claw. But you manage to pop it up, and it's wrapped in this black, like, braided rope. So you undo the knot there and roll out the seal, or roll out the scroll, and the memory sphere kind of rolls out of the paper here. So what are you doing first? Are you watching or are you reading?
I think I'll read the scroll first.
Yeah. So you start reading the scroll, and it is in Draconic. Luckily, of course, you have no problem reading Draconic, being a Gria. But it is Miss Shinsetsu's handwriting. And on it, it says, "My dear Nara," which everybody kind of called you in the village, and...
Okay. I open up the scroll and read it.
So, it is definitely in Miss Shinsetsu's handwriting, and the scroll reads, "My dear Naro," because that's what you were called in the village, but for her it never seemed as though it were a terrible title. She always used it very playfully with you, so you're not offended seeing this. But says, "My dear Naro, as you come of age, it is time that you learned why the village sees you as something akin to an outsider. It's not your fault. It's nothing you could have controlled. But within this sphere is very delicate information. It may change your views. It may not. Just know that it is the other side of your story." It is signed, Nakano Shinsetsu.
Becky will set the scroll aside, and she kind of looks at the little bead, the little ball that rolled out, trepidatiously reaches out and touches it.
So you touch the little gold band that's on the outside, as you've seen done on so many other memory spheres, and an image starts to play, and you see the visage of Osorochi as he says to a much younger Vani, "You have brought this outsider into our village without my knowledge. You know our laws. You know that there must be no outsiders lest they die. And you see now as the sphere turns to Vani, and Vani says, please, he's harmless. I found him in a wreckage, and he doesn't know. He hasn't been conscious. He would have died otherwise. And you just see, hear Osoroshi's voice go, then it would have been for the better, as he shall die. And you just hear Vani crying, and she... You see as Osoroshi motions for a couple of Guria guards to take this, or start walking towards Vani, and you see as the sphere now turns down, and Becky, for the first time since you were in Autolos, you see this tiefling, this green-colored tiefling with black horns that you saw on the far plane, and you see as the guards grab this man and start to, like, hoist him up, and he suddenly comes to consciousness, and a voice that is both deep and dark comes from him, and he says, Osoroshi, you flee from your fate, yet fate will find you nonetheless. It is not your choice whether the world will end or whether it will be saved, but fate has come. And you see as Osoroshi leans back and lets out this giant dragon roar, and he tells the guards that have this tiefling to bind him to the stake. And you see as they now tie him to this giant pyre of wood and stake. And Osoroshi says, I spit on your fate. And he inhales and lets this giant jet of black flames loose from his mouth. And it seems to envelop this tiefling male. And the man just kind of throws his head back, almost akin to agony. And he says, you may destroy this vessel, but I shall return. And you see Vani is crying as the flesh begins to just be consumed by this fire. The image ends, and you think that that's about it. So you set the sphere back down, but it starts to play on its own again. And you hear Miss Shinsetsu's voice say, Vani, you should have told Osoroshi. And she says, no, I loved him. I know it's silly to say, but I loved him dearly. And she kind of rubs the little bulge in her belly and says, he doesn't need to know until it's too late for him to say no. And Shinsetsu says, you're only going to bring heartache on yourself. And then the sphere ends.
I think Becky just kind of sits there, disbelief. It's a lot that she didn't know. All kind of unfolded at once. And I think she's kind of just lost in thought for quite some time until she hears maybe some people outside walking past. And so she kind of hurriedly grabs the sphere and re-rolls it back into the scroll and ties a knot around it and sticks it in with her things.
As you're doing that, something metallic seems to slip out of the very edge of the scroll, like it was tucked into like the scroll portion of itself, and it kind of clatters to the ground. Ting, ting, ting. And you see it looks like a key has fallen out of the scroll. There's a little tag on it that's kind of a hidden, or kind of tied to it with just a little piece of thread.
I'll pick up and examine it.
The writing on the tag to the key itself reads, Vault 2, Safe 1, Bank of Rubus.
Vault 2, Safe 1, Bank of Rubus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is this like a Gringotts thing?
I was like, is Becky getting ready to get a bunch of money and go to a magic school? We're in a town. Oh.
We're gonna buy a
please.
A lot. Yeah.
Think... Let's see. So this time of day, do we still have like dinner plans yet?
No, we already did past that.
Oh, we did those.
Yeah, yeah. It is getting late into the evening at this point.
Plans, correct.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Becky is going to grab this key and going to run down to the front desk and ask directions to the Bank of Rubus.
Okay. Concierge there takes the key in hand and reads the tag and says, so this bank should still be open. He, like, looks outside and he says, there should still be a guard on hand to help you. If you head over to the school, they should just be the building between the school and the church. So
excellent. Thank you. And she rushes out the door, spreads her wings, and jets off in that.
All right. So it doesn't take you long flying to reach the bank. It's a very large building, very secure. You see just on the outside alone that there is a large metal fence. And from the fence itself, it seems like there is a number of wards. There's actually like 5 guards walking just the front perimeter here. One at the gate and 2 kind of off to either side. And you see that there are like a couple of people on the roof as well. And when you approach, they slow you down and they say, do you have a key for entry?
Yeah, right here.
Very well. Step inside. Just make sure that you stick to your vault and stay within the teller's view, please.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Whatever that means.
So you step into these double doors on this building, and it seems like there's just one room to this place. It's kind of long, and I believe you have heels, right?
Yes.
Boots. Yeah, they kind of clack on the stone.
Well, kittens.
Yeah.
Kittens. They clack. Nothing too high.
Yeah, they clack on the stone nonetheless. But the smooth stone in here, there is one older gnome sitting at the front of the counter, and he kind of peeks up from his glasses. He's got this like white hair that kind of just stands straight up, and he looks up at you and says, oh, someone at this hour, how may I help you?
Yes, I just needed to check on my safe. Here, I have my key.
Very good, very good. Follow me. And he, like, hops down a couple of steps from the back of this because it was, like, at normal person height there. So he hops down a few steps and he kind of looks up the tag of the key, pulls you off kind of to a different vault on the side, and he reaches down. He's got, like, this giant key ring. And he kind of flips through a couple, and he places it in this smooth stone wall. He, like, feels, like, along for a crack, and then he, like, places it into the stone. The stone actually peels back magically and reveals a much longer room. This one, you look inside and can immediately sense the heaviness that is the abjuration magic in here to keep people from taking things or maybe from items inside from doing anything that they shouldn't be. So the weight of the magic is almost palpable in here. And he brings you along to one of the smaller doors. And he says, I believe this one here, first on your left, is the first vault. So if you would press your key inside, please.
Yeah, they'll go over and take the key and push it into the door.
So the door swings open, and he says, as it's kind of taking its time, it's this giant metal door. You can hear the mechanisms inside turning. And he says, oh, the seal on this one hasn't been broken in some time. So just please take what you need, but stay within my view, please. And as the door swings open, you see that there, for the most part, isn't anything in this room save for one metal table, one candelabra, which immediately flickers to light as soon as the door is completely open. And then on the table itself are two things. There is a chest that is not a huge, you know, adventurer-sized chest, but a chest nonetheless. And then there is a sealed scroll on the table as well that looks like it is not in the Near Eastern style, but perhaps, like, if somebody were to just roll a messenger scroll here in, like, Adalas or anywhere.
I mean, I think she's gotta read the scroll, so.
So you open the scroll, and it is this very strange, like, written language at first. And then eventually, what languages do you speak, Becky?
I speak, Draconic, Leonin, and Primordial.
It shifts between these languages and finally settles upon Common for you after it lingers a little bit on Primordial. And it's almost like it's adjusting to your eyes. And it says, "My dear Becky, hopefully that bothersome Miss Shinsetsu has given you the key to this vault that I left you and your mother. Inside is all of my current corporeal form's wealth that I leave to you and her. Just know that if something was to happen to me, that I so desperately did want to see you come into adulthood. But if something has happened to me and you would like guidance or your fate ahead, the key that I've left you also opens a vault in Saffris. And there you will find me, and I shall tell you everything that you wish to know about your fate. Love, your father, Andreas."
At least she's got one parent who seems to...
How is Andreas spelled?
Andreas is spelled A-N-D-R-E-U-S.
And then there's this chest in the middle.
There is.
Well, is it open?
It looks like it could be opened with the key that you currently have. Looks like the similar lock.
I will use the key on it.
Okay. It pops open, and inside you find 20 platinum pieces. You find a book that is wrapped in this black satin and pinned with a metal pin resembling a red rose. And then to the right of that is a bangle. And the bangle is made of black iron with a purple gem set in the middle. And it's kind of filigree worked. You pick it up and kind of... I guess I shouldn't force you to pick it up if you don't want to. It's in.
So it's black iron with filigree work and a purple gem, you said?
Yep.
Do you pick it up?
I think I will. I'll cast Detect Magic.
Oh, yes. It is definitely magical, but it is not cursed.
I pick it up, I guess.
Yep. So you kind of pick it up to look at it, and the purple gem kind of shines a little bit, and you, like, look and you see that the, etchings that had been along your wings start to react to it, and, the runes start to glow along your wings and your horn as well, so a flash of purple magic to this one, and feels good.
Huh. Does it feel a little voidy?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Not in that terrible way that you had remembered Diabolos.
Okay. Different flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I stuff these things into my bag. Anything else? Is that in the chest?
That is it. Yep.
Okay. I think I'll turn back to the clerk. Mm-hmm. And I will say... hey, was anything due on the upkeep of this safe?
No, everything had been paid for in advance.
Okay. And so I have ownership of this for some time?
4, and he, like, pulls out this, like, little turnstile notebook, and he says, for the next year.
Okay. Well, that should be fine. And how much is it for another year's rent?
He says it'll be 2 platinum.
Oh, goodness. Okay, another year will probably be fine.
For 20 years.
What's that?
The room was rented for 20 years, this being the 19th, so...
That's fine. Tell you what, let's just lock it up, and if I don't come back within the next year, we can just cancel it. Okay?
I think he just says gonna cancel it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was one other thing that we were supposed to give you 2 hours, and he, like, goes along the key ring, and he says... when the vault was to be opened, is he, like, reads off of, this, like, it's a notebook for you, but for him, it's big enough for him to have written, you know, like, a long-standing thing, and he says, as per agreement, Article 1, Subsection 4, dash B section, when owner is to open this vault again, is to receive the key to our sister bank in SAP. And he, like, twirls the keychain a little bit, clips it off of the ring, and then hands it to you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Will there be anything else this evening?
No, I think we can lock up and head out.
Very well. And he motions to one of the guards to escort you out as he, like, starts to use the apparatus to close the vault door.
Okay. Yeah. Phew. Well, I think I'm going to just take my goods and head on back to the inn where I told my friends I would be.
Sounds good. The rest of you at the bar, catch up to Milos, as Milos is probably, like, 2 drinks gone by the time you even step foot in the bar. The bar that, Milos, you would have probably gone to the most often here would have been the Thirsty Cactus.
Not Thirsty Cactar?
Nope.
I'll stop at some brandy.
But you would have known that this is kind of one of those bars that the older kids in school more than likely frequented it. So the average age of the patrons in this bar is pretty low. So it's pretty rowdy in here, pretty loud. There's a live band here, or... If it's not a live band, it's, you know, people have grabbed instruments and have just started kind of jamming together, so.
I feel like that's something Ellie would do if she's drunker she got. Yeah. She's got really high charisma. She definitely would.
But the Thirsty Cactus is known for its, sure, we'll call it the Thirsty Cactor. Why not? Because it has a special drink known as the Thousand Needles, and... basically, it's just, like, this little bit of alcohol that they drop this little piece of, like, magic stone into, and it, like, makes it kind of pop in your mouth.
Ooh, Crocs. Easy. Oh, I would like a round of the fancy popping drink for my friends.
And you see that there is a...
And one with a straw. A really long straw.
You see that there is a water ganassi male. He is pretty young, and he has kind of this like swept to the side white hair, and it seems like he's probably seen a couple bar fights. He may also be the bouncer for the area, but yeah, he immediately like slides out enough glasses if everybody wants a drink. They're these kind of tall cylinder glasses, and he immediately takes like. What looks to be like a plucked cactus and like pours some kind of spirits into it, shakes it up, pours it into the glass. It starts to do like this, like dry ice kind of thing where it starts to kind of pour a little bit of mist out. And then he drops these little metal pellets into the bottom and you can hear them start to like hear the drink start to pop a little bit. And he is like, gotta finish it quick. Otherwise the pops go away.
Oh, perfect. And it's one with a straw, though. Here you go.
and one with a straw. Yep, and he slides it in front of Marquise.
I wonder who needs the straw in this group.
I know I'm not there, but can you tell me how handsome is this War Genasi bartender? Would you say he's a tall drink of water?
So awful.
He's not bad looking. He's definitely older than most of the crowd in here, so he's probably in his mid to late 30s, whereas most of the crowd in here is like anywhere from like 16 to like maybe mid 20s at the latest.
The legal drinking age in fantasy games is
16.
Perfect.
How European.
In our world, yep. It is in Japan as well, so.
I feel like Becky, because she would.
Hey, what? No stage whispering.
I look at Din and I go, I feel like Becky's missing out, because I feel like there are a lot of Becky's type of conventionally attractive people here. should we like tell them to come back to the inn with us so she can meet them?
I thought we should just bring her here.
But... Oh, okay. Well, I didn't have one of those earpieces.
Oh.
So I can't tell her.
Gosh, that sucks to be you then, doesn't it?
She looked kind of sad when she left, so I thought maybe some flirting might make her feel better, because she always seems to enjoy flirting. So that might be a hobby of hers.
Okay. Yeah, I'll message her on the link portal.
All right. Becky, you hear Din's voice come over your link portal after you have... Link Pearl after you have exited the vault.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose I can head over. Where are you at again?
Where are we? Oh,
something about a cactar.
We're at a cactar place. There's boys here.
Is it? I think it's called the Tasty Cactar. No, that's not right. Is it the Tipsy Cactar? Something with a T. Timid? No, that's not right.
Is Ellie not remembering, or does Alicia not remember?
It's both.
Oh, I would say after taking another shot, it's the Thursday Cactar.
I knew it was a T.
You hear Milos's voice come over the Link Pearl, because everybody can hear everybody that has a Link Pearl.
Mm-hmm. I'll turn to one of the guards at the bank and be like, do you know the way to the Thirsty Cactar?
And he'd be like, oh yeah, totally, it's down that way. And he'll kind of point down that side, and he's like, look for Cliff. He's handsome.
That guy's got main character energy, and I want him in a ring.
Definitely a frequent
one. I bet he is. What are you doing after your shift?
My shift doesn't end until like 4 in the morning.
Gross.
Oh, that sucks. And she flies away.
Rude. You just hear behind you.
Betch.
Betch.
Are you wondering what your favorite wacky nerds are up to? Search for Campaigns of the Plains on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, and make sure to follow and like us to keep up with all our content and news. You might also find exclusive content for fans only. Remember to catch us on YouTube every Friday at noon for a new episode of Campaigns of the Plains.
Do you like supporting artists? Do you like nerdy things like Dungeons & Dragons? Then Co-op Creations SD is the store for you. You can find adorable dragons, menacing mind flayers, and jealous jelly cubes to accompany you on your adventures. Need a way to safely transport your math rocks? Then their homemade dice bags will keep your click-clacks warm. Stop on by their Etsy page soon, as stock is limited.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you find it because it's definitely the liveliest bar. Milos, are you pacing yourself, or you're just like, fuck it?
I'm not pacing myself at all. Like, I am like taking shots. I'm like introducing myself to like random people and just be like, hey, do you guys want some alcohol? And I'm just like buying rounds for everybody.
You'll get enough, you get a couple of those frat boys that are like, hey, why don't we all do shots? And they'll buy you guys shots, so anybody that wants to partake.
This is only my third time drinking in my life.
They're like, only the third time? That means 3 shots.
That's insultingly low.
After like three or four shots, Ellie jumps up on a table and starts singing along with the band.
Sure, you're making up lyrics because they're not really playing anything. They're just kind of, like I said, jamming.
Ellie can make up lyrics.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I got.
She just start reciting like poetry.
She might know some songs. I don't know.
Just starts reciting the Marquis books.
Oh my god, no.
In song verse. Mm. Yeah, I mean...
No, it's all like, what are they called? The sea shanties?
Oh, yeah, that's a lie. Anyway, it gets pretty lively in this particular bar as, people are having a good time, songs are being played, there are a number of drinks on the menu that, may or may not hold your fancy, but it seems like Milos is having a good time.
I feel like going up to people and that are buying drinks for Milos and going, he's got a boyfriend. No, Milos, you've got a boyfriend.
And I look over to the random girl that I'm talking to. I'm like, he's not here. It's fine. What? I never said we were exclusive.
But does he know that?
I'm sure he knows. It's not like I'm gonna sleep with some random people here. I mean, it's fine. I can talk to whoever I want.
Okay. Ellie gives him some eye. This doesn't seem to be like how relationships are supposed to work, but I don't know.
Having never been in one yourself.
I read a lot of books. But usually it's like, and then they kiss, and then that's the end. So you just, like, it just gets right to the point where they decide they like each other, and then the book ends. So you gotta make everything else up in your head.
Right, and
I assume it's like just... go farming and, you know, like, buy
something
house,
gets plowed. Like,
build a house. And what?
Right.
Something gets plowed.
Yeah, the farm.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So, I think when Becky gets there, considering her very eventful day, I think she just kind of sticks, like, she'll find the girls and kind of stick near them, and I don't think she, like, drinks or anything, but, like, she tries to kind of put on a good face, and, like, she'll prestidigitate, like, some fireworks up in the ceiling and, like, just kind of make the party a little lively.
All right. Is anybody doing anything specific at the party here tonight besides having a good time?
I want to make a friend. I want to make a frat boy friend.
Frat boy friend?
Yeah.
Sure. We'll say that you find a... I don't know. We'll say that you find a... Gosh. A typical Goliath-like frat boy. Like, he's the jock, you know, kind of type. He's like, I make machines with my hands! I make things!
We have a machine boat.
And he's like, that's so cool!
It's a flying one. Some guy named Sid's working on it for us.
Professor Sid? He's the coolest!
I mean, he's okay.
He makes things with his hands, too!
Yeah. So does Marquise. Sometimes he makes them blow up, though.
You make blow-up things with your hands?
Is it from the bandolier? Is that from the bandolier? Say it right now. Bandolier.
Please.
Oh,
how
man.
Drunk is Mark?
Oh.
I don't think we need to, like, fucking kill level him. This
country. Oh. All
right. So you guys
have... I mean... As far as, like, statistics go, like, he's likely to just go home. So.
Or turn into a mammoth. It'll be great.
Or turn into a mammoth.
Right.
The mammoth might wreck the bar, though.
Mm. Yeah.
But it'd be a fun party. Good story.
I don't have hands to make things with, and he just wrecked the
Yeah, I don't know.
How many things are going to get turned into a mammoth?
Wait, are you a student in the machine part of the college?
He thinks about it for a second, he's like, can they make things with their hands in the magic place?
Okay, I'm going to go with a yes.
Yeah.
How do I get one of the metal birds? I want one.
The tiny message birds?
Yeah, I want one.
You just go get one.
From where?
From Sid.
Shit. Okay. We gotta get one from Sid. Please. I was just hoping this guy could steal one for us.
Hey, have you guys been to the circus?
There's a circus?
Yes, it's outside.
Oh, that's right. No? Are there bears?
Yeah.
Oh. I gotta go right now. You already have a bear, though. What about a tiger? Are there tigers?
I don't know.
How do we get there?
It's outside the city gate. Let's go. And he
right
likes...
now? It's like 10 o'clock. Is it...
No, we're going right now. Let's go.
You want to go to the circus, Becky?
I guess.
Okay.
Considering everyone's, like, getting trashed, I think I'll play mom tonight and corral everyone and go to the circus.
Go splitting up.
I was like, is anybody else going, following this Goliath to the circus?
Nope.
Okay.
So the girls are going to the circus.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna go wrestle a tiger.
He, like...
I have no control over them.
He, like... He's a pretty big dude. He's standing probably about maybe a couple inches shy of 7 foot. And he is probably about 400 pounds of muscle. So he, like, looks at you guys and he's like, let's go! Come on! And he, like, grabs all three of you, like, throws you up on his shoulders.
I'm as tall as him!
He picks you up with ease.
Help! I think we're...
You're not as bulky.
And he just, like, sets you up on the, on his shoulders, and he starts, like, singing as you guys are, like, walking to the city gate.
Can you help us wrestle a tiger?
Can I?
Can you?
Will they let me?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
It's true. I was like, this circus is closed. I'm stupid.
So yeah, you guys go to the outskirts of the city, just past the city gate. You actually see that a number of skylights have been lit up. There are like a number of lights that are searching, sweeping the sky around this big top tent. It is red and white, and it is massive. There are a number of like... carts behind, kind of parked behind the tent. It looks like it's a train of maybe it would have been like cages of wild animals, just like apartment living carts for people on the go, things like that. There's a number of signs as you get here and you hear that classic kind of circus style music, you know, the da 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 da. And you smell immediately the smell of popped corn and roasted peanuts being sold. There's vendors calling out for popcorn, peanuts, souvenirs. What's get your souvenirs popcorn? Here. And you see a woman with like this big tray in front of her. She has those kind of like paper bag style like red and white paper things, and she says, "Here, my dear, try one. It's just a copper piece." And she hands you.
Am I assuming carried by the Goliath?
Yeah.
Thank you. I can't reach my pockets. Hey, I tap the frat boy on the head. Can you give her a copper?
And he's like holding on to you guys so you won't fall off. And he's like, "You want me to like dig in your?"
No, okay, wait. I'll go until I find
whatever. Her. I flip her a copper piece.
Okay.
Hey, frat boy.
Yeah?
What's your name?
My name's Marcus.
Cool. I'm Allie.
Allie?
Allie.
Allie. Cool. And he, like, keeps walking towards it, and then,
Set you down
right in front of the tent as there is a crier, being like, "Step right up, sure, show's about to start. Enter the marvelous world of our ringmaster, Cornelius."
That's really weird.
Real quick, DM, that train of, like, carts, they didn't look familiar, did they?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. Just making sure we're not going to the sham circus guy again.
Wait, are there tigers?
There's lions and tigers and bears, oh my!
How much to wrestle them?
And you see the crier's like, join the circus?
No. But my friend wants to wrestle a tiger.
And he kind of like rubs his chin for a second, and
he's
then
he's already wrestled a bear.
You see him touch the link pearl that's on his ear, and he's like, hey, boss, we got some ladies that want to wrestle a bear?
No, tiger. He already wrestled a bear.
I'll
wrestle them both.
Oh, and the lion the too. Time. The lion also.
And you see him just kind of like look at you all in like disbelief, and then all of a sudden, like,
show me your bear.
He kind of turns his head to the pearl, and then he's like, all right, there will be a special time in the show that our boss will call you up. So, what are your names?
This is Din.
I'm Din.
I'm Ellie.
That's Ellie.
Becky.
That's Becky.
I'm Becky.
And this is Marcus. We just met him at a bar.
Marcus is like, hi, I'm Marcus. And he's like, oh my God. I'll bet you are. Well, take your seats. The show should be starting soon. Don't want to miss it.
Are animals allowed?
Animals are in the show.
No, to watch the show. I look prone to Becky, or at Poppy.
Sure.
Perfect.
And he says, 2 copper piece for admission.
Money.
Okay. So you all step inside. There's quite a crowd drawn here tonight, as the house lights start to dim down a little bit. And then you see, as there is this whirl of red and white lights in the middle of this circus, and all of a sudden there's a flash, and there is this gentleman standing on one of those podiums where the elephants would stand on. He is dressed rather dapper for a ringmaster. He has this red kind of very well-kept surcoat, and then he has this red overjacket as well that's lined in black. Everything seems to be pressed very neatly. He has a top hat on that is black with a gold trim around the outside. He has white gloves on his hands as he appears in this puff of smoke, long white pants and knee-high black boots. In one hand, he has a cane that seems to be just this swirl of red and white with a little golden pommel at the top of it. And he plays with his gloves a little bit, and he says, welcome, one and all, to Cornelius's magical endeavor. And he bows a little bit, and you see a number of flashes go along the crowd. It seems like there's a bit of magic to this show. And he says, I hear we have quite a show for you all tonight. And perhaps a number of guests will try their hand at our arts for once. And you see as he, like, motions around with his hand and motions up, and a light seems to emanate from where he's standing up into the crowd, and you see trapeze artists, and there's time passed here. You see trapeze artists, you see a number of animal handlings such as elephants, and you see tigers and bears and lions and the sort. A man gets shot out of a machina cannon at a net. A number of people that are juggling swords and swallowing them, and there's quite a feast for the eyes. And finally, the ringmaster taps his cane, and it becomes silent. And he says, I hear we have some special guests in the arena tonight. And he looks immediately over at you, Becky, and Din, and Ellie.
And Marcus.
Huh? He looks over at you, and you all have this spotlight shown on you, and it kind of glares a little bit, and you can't see anything, and you kind of get used to the light for a second, and he says, I beckon you all to come down and join me in the ring, if you would.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay,
let's go.
okay, this is a bad idea, but sure, whatever.
We're all a little drunk, too.
You definitely, besides Becky, have perfect drinks.
Does Marcus go, too?
Yeah, is Marcus coming, too?
You start, like, making your way down the bleachers that are set up, and you kind of look around, and it's quiet in here, and you see that Marcus is, like, in the middle of his big, dumb clap, and you look around at all the other faces. By the time you, like, get down into the ring, you see that everybody is stopped.
How come everybody's on pause?
Well, that's because I've set the stage for you all.
There's nothing out here.
Exactly. Except for you and I to make a barter, of course.
We just wanted to wrestle something.
Oh, you can certainly wrestle something, but I thought I'd have a little more fun in mind for you all.
Okay.
Does this ringmaster seem familiar in any way?
No.
Okay.
I have some questions. Is the fun illegal?
Well, it depends on what country you're in.
Well, I'm in this country.
And he says, no, I don't think so, my dear.
Okay.
You see, I hear from a little birdie, and he tips his hat, and you see a little bird, like, a couple birds fly off into the tent.
Put the bird out.
And he says, I hear from a little birdie that you all need a little help. And he, like, pops his hat down his elbow and kind of pops it off and puts it back on his head, wipes the brim, and he says, those who change fate in this world run into me ever so often, and it is luck every time that they meet me, for I help them along their way. And he kind of does the little walk with his hand, and you see behind him this big illusion-like glove start to walk behind him.
I have some more follow-up questions.
As you may.
Are you a god?
Some say yes, some say no.
Does anybody need to make a pact with you? Because, like, I think we're all spent, honestly, on pacts.
I don't want anybody in a pact with me, no. That's, no, thank you.
That's good. I don't think Becky could take another one.
Great. I'm booked, honestly.
I can summon one, kind of. It's a long story.
Quite. No. I possess...
I'm missing part of my soul, so I really don't have a lot of space for any pacts.
Not my area of expertise, but okay. Anyway, every once in a while, I do feel like helping a random mortal here and there. And this time around, it seems to be you three.
Gosh, we should have brought Asher. He just needs the most help. Could we get a favor instead?
I don't deal in favors, my dear. What I do deal in, and he, like, taps his cane on the ground here, and you see as a shelf rises up behind him, there's a number of items behind him in said shelf, and he says, I carry a few various wares for trade.
What?
I trade in magical items.
Oh, I see. What are the items?
Well, he points back to the shelf behind him. He says, I have a number of wonderful items, that which may suit some of you, suit others. It's a shame you were the only ones to take. And he points over to Marcus, and you see as he, like, points over to Marcus with his cane, and you see Marcus all of a sudden swell up like a balloon, and he pops in his place.
Did you kill him?
He never existed, my dear.
What? What?
He was my lure.
I'm sorry your boyfriend didn't exist. Okay, so...
I met him today, so why would he already be my boyfriend? In the books, it takes a really long time. Sometimes it doesn't, but those never last.
In the books, all the boyfriends are princes. So, okay, so what's the catch?
No catch. I trade.
What's the trade, then?
Do you want a bucket hat?
It disguises
people.
That can be part of your barter, absolutely.
I got a scarf. I don't remember what it does, though.
Well, and he starts to bring down items from his shelf, and he says, I have a number of items, and the first item that he picks up and puts down on a table that suddenly appears between yourselves and him, you see he just brings down this doorknob and he places it on the table.
We've had one of those before. We found a genie in it.
Mine's a little better than a genie.
How can you be better than a genie? It literally saved our friend's aunt's life. They, Mobs. Them, she, lives.
Yes, but can your doorknob do this? And he pops it onto the cupboard behind him, and he turns it, and he opens it up, and you see this wonderful house behind him.
How do I want? What do you want? I want that. That's
and he slams cool. it shut, and it locks itself.
Our doorknob actually doesn't do anything anymore. It doesn't work because we took the genie out.
Well, what do you have to trade?
I have a bucket hat.
Not quite the price of this, and he kind of twirls it in his hand.
I have a scarf. I don't remember what it does. Oh, I think it's a of tongues. Something. Dude, for some reason, I didn't add that to my inventory.
This whole thing is definitely by 10. Like, I don't know.
Should I see what else he has.
I want the doorknob. I have a lucky stone.
Ooh, I would be interested in that. The hat and one other smaller item.
I got a scarf.
I will take the lot.
Ah, I get a doorknob. Ellie's not good at bartering. She just wants the doorknob.
Why are you stopping her?
She's her own woman.
So are you taking it?
Yeah.
All right. He takes those three items off your hands and hands you over the doorknob.
What does it do? Besides make a house appear.
Is that not enough for you? I mean, there are servants inside to cater to your every whim. You
Wait,
can...
I can live in the doorknob?
For a small amount of time, yes.
How long?
Usually 24 hours.
Holy shit, this is so cool. I've got a house.
I mean, honestly, she bought a house for a scarf and something else. Like, that's pretty great in this economy.
A scarf, a rock, and a bucket hat.
Right.
Things a millennial would have.
It's true. I've got all these little things.
This is a true fantasy world where you can buy a house for a hat and a scarf and a rock.
Yep. At the circus.
I don't know what else that he has. I just wanted the doorknob.
You see, behind him, he has a little, like, mummified monkey's paw holding a crystal.
You should take the monkey's paw.
No, I'm not taking the fucking monkey's paw.
Becky doesn't know what a monkey's paw is.
I know what a monkey's paw is.
That's beside the point.
Or is it a red herring?
Yeah, maybe it's really good. Maybe Josh is toying with you because he knows that you know what a monkey's paw is. I mean, you could do detect magic or identify.
What does it do? Why don't you just ask him what it does? What's that?
This little monkey is holding an exquisitely rare creature inside this crystal.
What? What kind of?
That is for you to gamble on, my dear.
Do you want it? Yeah? Shit. I don't have a whole lot. What do you want for it?
What do you have to barter?
I have a bow. Racers, archery. But I am not getting up my creatures.
If you need more things to get rid of, or to barter with, I've got some more.
Yeah.
I mean, the things I have left, I don't want to get rid of, I don't think.
What, you don't want to get rid of your ribbon or your staff of twin casting or...
Twin casting. You other... have the staff of twin casting now. I gave it to you.
Oh, yeah, I have the restoration one. She has the evocation.
The only thing I have is the ribbon, and I have the Idun's ointment, which is a healing thing that I always forget that I have, but it's useful.
I don't know who has these things, but I'm looking at my notes, and we have some stuff that we got from the cave, like a katana and a dog and a jug and stuff. I don't know who has those things.
I don't know. I was in a rug. So.
That's true.
I think I have a mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a mask that...
You have a bow? Yeah.
I would take those and the bracers. They're a magic set.
You don't, it's gonna be like you don't do archery anymore, do you?
Well, I have...
I mean, if you don't want it and you want to trade it.
Well, I technically have two bows. That's the moon bow. Yeah, sure. I'll give you... Yes, the moon bow with the bracers.
Alright, so he hands you over the monkey's paw and he says, good luck.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
No. Reaches back. He's got one other item behind him. This particular item seems to be just your standard, ordinary, everyday set of magic or a set of cuffs.
What do they do?
do a number of things, but one of the fun things is they can bind a creature and keep it from escaping, like normal cops, but this one can keep even incorporeal things around.
Hmm.
Have a fiend that you want to trap on this plane? Put the cuffs on him.
Hmm.
That could be useful.
What?
I feel like that could be useful, you know, since we all have our fair share of enemies.
Wait, I think I saw a grin on Becky's face when she heard that. What? What were you thinking?
Do I still have those bracelets that showed me the visions of Baron?
You do, but their magic has been spent.
Oh. I mean, yeah. But it's materia.
Yeah, but it's bad. It's evil.
Is it, though? I don't know. I guess. Yeah. So, a long time ago, Diabolos handed me a dark purple piece of materia.
He sure did.
I pull that out and hand it forward.
Boys do not know what we're up to, and I don't...
and you see, as there's a little glint in the ringmaster's eye, as he smiles and he says, you're offering this as trade?
I am.
Fair enough. And he hands you the shackles, and as soon as he takes what appears to be a materia, he says, I feel I've gotten the better deal on this one.
It's probably not okay then.
If you say so.
He smiles and says, I don't know if you quite knew what you had here, my dear, but, and he takes his hand and waves it over the materia, and you see as the stone around it just melts, and in the center of it, there is this, just this sliver of blackness on the inside, and he says, this here is piece of Diabolos' realm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Very handy, actually. With a little shard like this, one could, and he, like, snaps it in half. And you see this, like, pulse of blackness kind of push out from it. And he says, one could very well tie the Void Lord to themselves and command him. Very nice, ladies. Good night. And he flies in the air, and all of a sudden the circus is gone. You're left standing in an empty lot. With a bunch of, like, really bewildered people that have landed on their asses?
That's probably fine. That whole thing? That's probably fine.
I think we came out on top. I don't know what this is.
I think that we came out on top. You know what? Listen, ladies. We do not tell the boys. Especially about that last part. Okay? They don't need to know. Where did you guys get those cool new magical items? Oh, we found a midnight cellar. That's all. We found a guy that sells magical items, but he only opens up his shop at nighttime. It's really cool.
That's what happened.
That's what happened. We found it on our way back from the circus.
But honestly, you don't have to tell him that. We were actually here to wrestle a bear. Where's the bear?
I don't think the bear was ever real, Din.
A bunch of people are like looking around at all of you, and they're like, why are we out here?
Mass hallucination. You guys should all go home and go to sleep.
I'm going to grab Ellie under the shoulders and flap my wings and take off.
Where are you going?
Okay.
Goodbye, people.
Are you flying along?
I'm going too. Let's go.
Okay.
Get Poppy! I'm grabbing Poppy!
I'll grab Poppy.
Okay.
You all hallucinated this. Bye.
They all just, everybody in the crowd just like stares off at you flying away like, what?
Am I still high?
Alright, so we'll say for the sake of brevity, we'll speed things up to the next morning. There comes a knock at your door, Milos. There is a couple of students that are there to take you to your operation.
I try and wake up Araha if he isn't already to tell him goodbye, depending on if he's awake or not.
Yeah, he seems really hard to rouse. He seems to be getting a bit paler. But he does wish you luck and says that he'll make sure to visit the temple and be out of there before you're awake.
You better. If you don't go there, I'm going to drag you there myself.
Well, we'll see who fares better in their plans for the day today.
Oh, don't talk so loud.
All right. Are the rest of you joining Milos and going to the observatory to watch his operation?
Being the one who stayed sober last, yes, I will.
I had one
close.
I invited all the girls over to her room to have a sleepover in her fancy new mansion.
We'll skip that part and we'll do it on voice later on. So, anyway.
I'm gonna go. I want to go watch them flay Milos.
Yeah. Yes, but I mean, we'll skip the mansion part and we'll describe it later.
Oh, then we can describe it the first time the whole group uses it.
Yeah. Anyway, you all are, it's pretty early here. You see a number of people that may or may not have made it home last night, kind of sprawled out on the lawn of the campus as you get closer to Sparks.
True college.
You see a line forming out of the regular clinic. There's a lot of people, like, talking to each other, and they're like, did you see that thing that happened? Like, why were a bunch of people outside? Were we all dreaming? You kind of overhear as you guys walk by. But you're taken to one of the central buildings, and the two students that are with you, Milos, they... you guys reach, like, an area where they motion the rest of the group to ascend a pair of stairs, and they say, now is a good time to say goodbye. You'll be out for a little while here, so if you need to say anything, now's the time.
If anything happens to me, make sure Raha goes to the fucking temple. If one of us gets to live, I guess he should.
You're going to live? Now get the fuck on the table.
I'm going! Also, don't send me, Ellie. Just resurrect me like a normal fucking person.
I don't know how to do that. My job is like to keep the dead dead. I do not know how to make you alive again.
Can we I mean, you all went to fetch me, so we'll try and fetch you. I don't
think anyone knows. That's a good idea. We'll put you in a jar.
Why a jar? Anyway.
I mean, you'll fit in a jar better.
Yeah, I think you can
make anywhere else. Yeah. We'll wrap you in a rug. How about that?
Oh boy.
Anyway.
Resurrect me like a normal fucking person.
I don't care.
No one has ever once displayed knowledge on how to restore someone from the
we've
dead.
We've been together for
excluding a very small, one tiny, just outside of the box situation.
I mean. I definitely can resurrect.
I think we just got.
Oh, well, you're the only one that can.
Yeah. Have I ever presented as someone who could bring someone back from the dead when my job is to literally keep you there?
Man, I only have revivify, but still, it's better than zip.
Yeah, we got zip.
Yeah.
All right.
Zip up.
Best
body
I got
bag.
Is shoving your pyroplies back in your body and then letting you repossess it as an unsent. But I mean, Marquis seems to be doing okay, so.
It's not better.
So. You guys are motioned by another student. One of the students that was traveling with you leads you up a set of stairs, and there's a little balcony overlooking a surgical room. You see that there are a couple of tables there, and you see that the professors have already probably been gowned. They're fully gowned. They actually have similar masks to what Marquise is wearing currently.
I told you.
For surgical masks at the moment. So they are like head to toe like covered. So they are taking the sterileness of the room in effect. You see that there are the three professors that you had met previously. As they are kind of making notes, checking equipment, one of them is kind of monitoring a certain crystal, and you see, you see that Professor Vortran, the Dragonborn professor, kind of looks up and sees you all in the gallery and kind of waves to you, and he, goes over to one of the walls and kind of clicks a button, and you hear his voice come over this this like metal tube that's kind of piped up into the area, and he says, "We'll
be beginning shortly there. So, Professor Wolf and Professor Kriska will be monitoring everything, applying sleep spell, but also a chemical sleep agent to make sure that Milos doesn't feel any pain, is asleep the entire time. So we'll be monitoring him, and Professor Onyxjaw will be monitoring his vitals the entire time. So rest assured, everything is in hand. And Milos, down below in the room, the student motions to you to move behind a curtain, and they say there's a gown, and if you would, a little bit of sterilization powder to, and she kind of like shyly says to kind of place in your fur, if you would, please.
You told me, like, cover myself in this powder?
Yes, and she kind of like, she's like shying away, like she's getting really red, and she's like, it's just to make sure that things stay sterile, please. You don't have normal skin, so we can't really use soap, and I'm sure you wouldn't like to be wet.
That's fair. I just, like, pour it all over myself and just, like, pretend to shower in it. Just, like, bathing in this... Does it, like, tingle or anything?
No, it just... It smells very medicinal and very clean, and she... says there's a robe for you to put on, if you would, when you're ready, step out from behind the curtain.
Okay. So I finish, like, cleaning myself with this dust. Mm-hmm. and then I'll put on the robe and, like, make a little ribbon on my belly with the straps.
Sure.
And walk out and be like, well, now that I'm covered in a bunch of dust, now what?
And she motions to a set of metal doors beside you here, and she says, if you would, they are going to prep you inside with an intravenous needle to be able to put you to sleep. So if you wouldn't mind, just enter in there.
Okay, sounds good. I, like, try and stand tall, but I definitely have an air of... terrifiedness to me as I push through the doors and just like calmly hum to myself as I approach.
So you walk inside and you see the professors. They again are mass similar to Marquis, but they are in kind of like this completely like white gown from head to toe that covers everything. But you can see their faces, unlike Marquis's mask, their eye holes aren't like tinted at all, so you can actually see beyond the mask, and you see Professor Vortran, and he kind of takes your hand, helps you up onto the table and to lay down. It's very cold in here, and he kind of starts to erect kind of this tent as Professor Wolf starts to, she says, there's going to be a little bit of a poke, and you feel this poke in your arm. This cool liquid start to fill into your arm, and then you see as Professor Kriska comes over with a crystal, and she starts chanting a spell for sleep, and you start to feel the effects of the whatever chemicals that they're using to put you to sleep. It starts making your body very heavy, and you can't really, like, move at all. Things get heavy and your eyelids start to get heavy a little bit. And then you see as very short dwarven male, Professor Onyxjaw, kind of nod over to one of the students along the hall, and Professor Vortran pops the microphone for you guys up at the top one more time and says, we're just going to play a little bit of music to help soothe him. I'm sure he's all nerves, so helps us as well keep steady hands. And so you see as one of them presses on this machine, and this kind of band music starts playing a little bit over the speaker as well. You guys can hear it up there. They put a
kind of this tent over you, and they slide this other table next to you. Has a couple of instruments on there as well. But the table is about as long as you. And you see as the professors start speaking to each other pretty closely as they're watching you, Milos. And then you see as Professor Fortune leans down and starts to kind of check the area where the metal has kind of taken surface. And just as you're inching closer to sleep, they say, well, he wasn't a good candidate for it. We shouldn't have suspected as much, but we're going to have to go back to plan A. Yes, we're going to have to graft it back onto the other one. And at this time, Milos, the rest of you in the gallery can't hear this as the music is playing over what they're saying, but Milos, they are close enough for you to hear. You're starting to get loopy, and you definitely can't, like, move or anything. But you see as they roll this other table closer to you and erect kind of a tent to connect the two. And you see as they say, yes, I think we should go with the original plan. She's much stronger than he is. She'll be able to endure. You see as they lift the veil between the two of you, Milos, as your head and your eyes are getting heavy, but you manage to roll over just in time. You see female Hrothgar underneath this tent, and she too has horns. She has very similar coloration to yourself as well. When you look, you see that she is almost about semi-conscious as you, and her head rolls over and her eyes widen as much as they can for someone about to be put under. Her eyes are also one blue, one orange, but opposite of yours. She has short golden fur with black and white stripes, swept back black horns, and she looks at you and she mouths the words, Milos, before you are completely asleep. And that is where we will pick up next time.
Maybe if you won't turn to the dark side, your sister will.
All right, guys. Tune in next time to see how Milos fares through this operation. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Call this episode.
Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next week. Make sure that whatever platform you're watching or listening on, you are following and or subscribing. If, for those of you on YouTube, make sure you go down below and let us know what you thought with a comment and give us a like if you could. Subscribing, hit that bell. If you're on any of our podcast platforms, make sure you are following. And if any of them allow you to comment, go ahead and do so. We do pay attention and it helps us to know where to go forward.